we welcome you to Region Candidate Council interview session. And you got a chance to meet the people, and we would like an opening statement of 3 to 5 minutes, if you would, please.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be here. You obviously know my name. I'm from Duluth. I'm a native Minnesotan. I went to school at the University of Michigan and came back here after law school, practiced here in St. Paul for a couple of years, moved to Duluth. That's where I spent my entire career. I'm a lawyer. I'm fortunate enough to have found something that I hope I'm good at. I know I love it. I enjoy it immensely. It's created many opportunities for me. I'm a general practice business lawyer, which means I do a broad range of work in the business area, ranging from organizing corporations and nonprofits to representing people in buying and selling businesses. A lot of experience on the business side, but of course the law, like many things, is a people business. Mm-hmm. That, my family, and my community involvement has really been what my life is about. I was introduced to the fact that there was an opening on this board, and originally I thought, I don't know if I have time, I'm too busy. And then I started to think about it, and I thought, what have I been preparing myself for? The university is a great institution. I can't think of a better thing or a more important thing to do than be a member of the Board of Regents, and I've just become increasingly excited about it. I think I'm up to this. I have a positive approach to life and the way I do things. I believe in collaborative leadership. I've had a lot of experience, much of which, of course, is in my application, but I'd like to highlight a couple of things. Because the legal aid part of my career goes directly to the question of equality and diversity. I became involved with legal aid, the civil side of providing free legal services to the less fortunate, shortly after law school, and that's been a passion of my community involvement career. I've served as chair of legal aid of Northeastern Minnesota on several occasions, including again recently in the midst of a budget crisis, and I've had the opportunity also to work with that organization with legal services on a statewide basis through appointments by the Supreme Court to several committees. In the course of my community involvement there and at the College of St. Scholastica, where I served two extended terms on the Board of Trustees, I also, I think, became really, what really became embedded in me is what being a trustee or a director or maybe a regent is about the difference between governance and day-to-day management, about the responsibilities you have to take responsibility for evaluating leadership, hiring leadership, helping direct leadership, about collaborative decision-making in a board of diverse people, and I'm very proud of what I've learned, and I do, in all due or maybe not too much modesty, believe that I would bring something to the Board of Regents. I've been involved while I didn't attend the university. I'm a Duluthian. You know, as you well know, the University of Minnesota Duluth is a key piece of the Duluth economy. Much of my career has been in business development and promotion of my community. The university as a whole, I've actually worked for the university as an attorney on a half a dozen occasions, and that's given me a peek at how the university operates. I'm a donor to the university, and overall I think I have, well, I thought I had an understanding of how complex and big the university was until I started learning about what it takes to be a regent, and I'll figure it out. But it is a key part of our state. The university's autonomy and independence seeing its way through budget times, achieving the goal of being one of the top research, public research universities in the country, the top three, I believe, is what the plan says. That's a daunting task, and I think we all know where the university sits now. And I think it can and will, with the will of the people and the leadership of the board, get to where it needs to be. I hope I sort of touched on the areas that are listed, and I'm happy to answer questions, or I can babble forever because I love to talk.
All right. We'll take the first question from Margaret Carlson.
You're a two-time graduate of the University of Michigan, so you're a Wolverine. You probably watch that institution closely. What have you seen from the University of Michigan that you think the University of Minnesota should aspire to?
Well, that's, I got to be careful with that question, I think, because I do. I will confess to mixed loyalties. I'll always be a Gopher. I was born and raised here. And I do have loyalties to Michigan. I think that one thing the University of Michigan has done very well, and it was true at some level when I was there, but even more so now, is find ways to become more and more independent of the political system. The law school is a great example, because the law school, I think, receives less than 2% of its funding from the state. That puts a lot of strain on it in many ways, but it also has given it the independence to stay a great law school. The University of Michigan, I think, has learned to focus on the things that it's really good at. Not that it has abandoned a lot of programs, but I think its focus is much more now, even than when I was there, on what it's really good at. Michigan, of course, has had crushing financial times here the last few years, and had the university not learned to tap all of its other resources to build its endowment and to create that independence, I think it would be in deep trouble, and I think it isn't. I think it's prospering, and it's seen as leading the state out of this economic mire, and that's something that the University of Minnesota, not to say that the University of Minnesota doesn't know that and doesn't aspire to it and hasn't, I think, increasingly focused on it, but that's something that I believe in. It's not a business, obviously. It's an important state institution, but it's there's things that it could do.
Good answer.
Well, thank you.
David Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. We didn't meet earlier, but Dave Fisher is my name, and I'm one of those that says that lawyers are probably underrepresented in this institution. So
and I certainly agree with you.
The question I have is, there are many people that would aspire to become regents because they think that it's a good idea and they bring some qualities to the board of regents that might be useful. I'm just wondering, if you were to be elected by the legislature as a regent, what would you do to advance the cause or fix any problems you see at the University of Minnesota?
Well, I almost feel like I'm going to duck that question because I'm not sure. I think that first you have to get a sense of how the regents really work, and I don't know that. I have taken the liberty to call and discuss, meet with several of them, and discuss with them how the body works and their sense of that. But I don't have an agenda, so to speak. There's things that I think are personally see as very important. Obviously, I already alluded to the university's independence, assuring that there is access for everyone who should attend the university is not only important from a standpoint of justice, it's important from the standpoint of making sure that the whole state supports the university. If the university isn't accessible to everybody, then the university can't be the institution that it should be. But I don't plan, if I make it through this process, to cruise through 2 or 3 or 4 years, but I think in terms of my own personal agenda as to what I think might happen, I really do have to wait and see and make sure I understand where the university is. Obviously, we have a new president. I've had the privilege of leading a number of searches for, actually I led the last two searches at Scholastica, the last two presidential searches. I led two searches at Wolf Ridge, which is another educational institution focused on elementary environmental education. So I think I really do understand the difference between being a regent and an executive, and I really want to see where the administration wants to take the university. And they do need more attorneys.
Richard Newell, please.
The university has this research mission, trying to achieve to be one of the top research institutions, public institutions in the world. And we have a new president coming in. What do you see the role of the board with that stated mission of the current administration, and then they got a new one coming in? How do you see that kind of all playing out, or how would you try to steer it so how it play out?
Well, I don't know that there's a struggle between the board and the administration, and obviously I'm sure that our new president isn't coming with the idea that he's going to struggle with the regents. But I would look to Eric Kaler to say, here's how we're going to accomplish this. It's already been stated that that's something that he wants to see expanded and to see the university research not necessarily visualizes being on behalf of private enterprise, but to interface the university's research with the business community, which is a great dynamic, which I think would be good for the whole state. In terms specifically, our regents, if that is the policy, and if it continues to be the policy, and if the regents fully endorse it, then as a regent, I've got an obligation to try to carry it out. It's easier when you really believe something's a great idea and important. It's important not just to achieve this goal of being in the top three public research institutions, but it's also important to the future of the state in terms of the state economy and jobs and keeping young people here. It's a huge issue in northern Minnesota. How do we keep our youth employed? I have seven children, and two of them are living in Duluth now, but they're both still in school. And the rest of my kids, for various reasons, have gone. Fortunately, most of them are here, so I've got a lot of kids and grandchildren in the Twin Cities. But I feel like I'm sort of ducking, but I need to be on the board to understand how the board's going to work. The board needs to further the mission and the goals of the university and support leadership, and if it doesn't agree with leadership, then it has to move leadership.
Patrick Duncanson.
Thank you. In your opening comments, you said you hope you could bring something to the board, and this is not a time to be modest. Would you please say specifically what you can bring to the board? Many other candidates have been able to articulate their vision of what they would bring to the board, so now's your chance to expound.
Well, I'm happy to do that, and since you said I didn't have to be modest, I won't be. I believe an accomplished attorney, and as in the role I ascribe to as an attorney, and where I am in my career, I think I know that I'm a good negotiator. I'm good at getting along with people. I'm open to new ideas, and I'm willing to assume a leadership role. It's not modesty. It says it wasn't until I put together my application that I realized that virtually every board that I'd been on, I had chaired. Mm-hmm. And I hope that isn't because I'm the middle-of-the-road person who is acceptable to everybody, because while I like to think I'm open to new ideas, I believe in leadership and the responsibility of leadership. Candidly, I feel my life experience has just, like, prepared me to do this. I've had a lot of experience with institutional management, with understanding the difference between governing and running a business or a nonprofit on a day-to-day basis. I have a commitment to education. Scholastic is a a small total student body, including peripheral campuses, something like now like 3,500 students. But understanding how you deal with faculty, faculty governance and independence is a critical piece of how a university works. I know those things and I understand them. I'm good at the process, as I said, of collaborative leadership, and I'm open to new ideas. I have great energy, and I'd hit the ground running.
Jerry Rogers.
Thank you. Actually, Pat stole my first question, but I have another. In your opening statement, you described the term that you believe in collaborative leadership. Can you tell me more about what does that mean?
Well, what it means to me is that a board of 12 people, for example, needs to find a way to work together collaboratively, or they fracture both themselves and the institution that they're governing. So collaborative leadership means to me a lot of independent views, openly expressed, with real integrity, fair listening to people's ideas, having an open mind, trying to come to a consensus. But if it's a 7-5 vote when it's all done, that can still be collaborative leadership so long as the body follows the lead of the majority, which actually, as I'm sure you know, is one of the Regents' operating rules, I think, that you're to support decisions that are made. So I think collaborative leadership to me is the sharing of leadership with the responsibility of joining together.
Yep. Harriet Porter.
I actually have two questions. One is a clarification. I'm not sure that I heard the full statement a moment ago. The last part I caught was moving leadership. And help me out if you guys heard this too. Something about not agreeing on direction, or then the board would need to move leadership. Did I hear that correctly?
If the direction is defined and not seeing the leadership as following it to advance the direction, then you'd have to move leadership, is what I thought I heard.
Right, that's the tough part of the job, I think. What happens when a board of an institution feels that the institution is not headed in the right direction? It has a responsibility. It's the biggest responsibility in my mind is hiring, firing leadership to either move the leadership or ultimately to change it.
Okay. Sure.
That's the idea that I had in my mind.
Okay. The second and real question has to do with fiscal responsibility and previous fiduciary accountability. Can you talk a little bit in detail about the complexity of the organizations that you have had some fiscal accountability for?
Well, I can say unquestionably that none of them are as complex as the University of Minnesota, and none of them had budgets in the $3 billion range. We have the number of employees that the university has. During my period of time involved with St. Scholastica, the institution had a major financial crisis, fiscal crisis, rapidly escalating costs, institutional tuition and aid pretty much locked into a hierarchy of competitive institutions in the Midwest, and a student body, a population that was stagnant. So the complexity of that is obviously, what do you change? You can't raise tuition by 40%. There is, as you probably know, actually state aid that goes to the private colleges, but that's been pretty much a constant for the better part of 30 years, I think. And so you have to find new ways to deal with things. And to me, here's the university, the complexity of, well, I'm not commenting on the university. Other things I've been involved in, sorry. I just over the last 18 months agreed to come back to the chairmanship of the Legal Aid Service of Northeastern Minnesota Board, a much smaller, you know, $3.5 million budget, because we had a financial crisis based on diminished funding. What happens in recessions? And the legal needs of the poor go up, and there's more clients because there's more poor people. I credit great management in coming up with a way to accomplish right-sizing that organization. But as the chair and working with the board, I help lead the board through the process of sucking it up, so to speak, and biting the bullet, a couple of euphemisms, and moving the institution forward. So I think I understand the dynamics. I'm not an accountant. I can read a balance sheet or an income statement. I counsel businesses. I help people raise money. I've been involved a lot in fundraising. I just finished chairing a campaign for the Family Justice Center in Duluth for the Safe Haven Women's Shelter that I'm on the board of. I led a $40 million campaign, statewide campaign for all the environmental learning centers, me and four other people. Excuse me, I didn't do it wrong. The chairs of the major environmental education institutions. So I understand how complex it is. Where are we? We're the University of Minnesota. We have the ability to raise tuition. And that's sort of the easy fix that legislators and sometimes the public, those of whom aren't people struggling to get through school or to send their children to school, they can go to. In a budget crisis, there aren't a lot of places to go or new money. We have a social service network, which is very important, and the consumers of that, by definition, don't have any money. Mm-hmm. So the university is a target, and the university has to find ways to duck the bullet to take responsibility.
Okay. Richard Dinsey.
Yes, thank you for coming, Mr. Burns. One topic that's relatively important, I guess, is athletics. How important, what role does that play in your views to a university like Minnesota?
Well, you know, it sort of goes back to
the
Wolverines, and I don't mean because of the competition between the Gophers and the Wolverines, but one of the things that really has contributed immensely to the independence and strength of the University of Michigan is that its athletic program has been bought into by the whole state, even though it competes with a couple other major institutions, including one that's only... You're not a Michigan State grad, are you?
I'm not a Spartan.
Okay. You scared me there for a minute. So I think that there's no question but that athletics plays that role. Should play that role of helping to draw the state, the student body, mm-hmm. the student body and the faculty, the alumni together, and it's been shown over and over again, it helps raise money. Athletics are also important. I was unfortunately, I was a hockey player growing up. I played freshman hockey at Michigan, but I remember at the end of my freshman year, the head coach came up to me and said, "Now, Burns, you're not planning on going up for the varsity, are you?" I took that as a pretty clear indication. That was the end of my collegiate hockey career. But I participated in intramurals, and you know, athletics and exercise are important. But I see the whole school spirit, financial aspect. It's an important piece of the university.
All right. Sonia Cairns.
Okay. You answered very well a question I had intended to ask. So I'm going to shift gears. You talked about the experience of University of Michigan of helping to lead the state out of dire straits. And we've talked a lot during the last several days about the university being an economic engine for the state of Minnesota. Can you just talk a little bit about that concept, about how important the university is and could be to this state's economic situation?
Sure. Well, first of all, the one part of it that's really obvious that I really sort of skipped over is that what it is today, it's one of the biggest employers. Mm-hmm. And one of the consequences of cutting the university budget, which, as you know, very heavily loaded on the personnel end, is that you lose jobs. So I'm trying to remember, it was one of the administrators at UMD, and I had a conversation as I was preparing for this a couple weeks ago, and whether he's right or not, and I won't name him because I might misquote him, but his view is that nobody understands that whole issue better than people who live in Duluth, where UMD has been at the center of, for a long period of time, sustaining the community, and now I think helping to lead the community forward. So that's the sort of the existent level, and then there's the whole next level of the research aspect of the university, developing new ideas, bringing new technology, not as a slave to industry, because that doesn't work. Industry can hire its own researchers and does, but real innovation comes out of, according to people that know more than I do, I'm a liberal arts graduate with a law degree, comes out of pure research, but that the pure research is where the true innovation comes. Mm-hmm. And I think that at least the perception is that the university has not done as good a job at that as it can. I think there is a renewed and expanding commitment to that, and I think that that can have, you don't need too many Medtronics or whatever the next generation of industry is in Minnesota to really have a significant effect on the whole state's economy and generate tax revenue, which can be given to the university.
All right, Ardell Brady, please.
You mentioned hockey. I hadn't even thought about this, but the Big Ten has added Nebraska for most of the sports now, I guess all of them. And there's some discussion now that Penn State is going to be adding hockey, and there could be a new Big Ten hockey conference, which then would eliminate, I would guess, Duluth, St. Cloud, others. And what's your thoughts on a Big Ten conference for hockey?
I got mixed feelings about this. First of all, I have a 16-year-old grandson who was the captain of the St. Louis Park hockey team who would love to play Division I hockey, and so the more Division I programs there are, every time a new school announces they're going to have a Division I program, he sends me an email. So I'm actually following that pretty closely. You know, there's a bigger question, too, is, you know, when do the interests of the university as a whole and UMD conflict? I personally think that UMD would, and the WCHA in a different format would do just fine. Mm-hmm. If there was a Big Ten conference, it would have something to do with making hockey a bigger sport, not just in the Midwest, but really in the country. I haven't consulted with our Division II coach of football, coach of the year, and athletic director. You saw the paper early in the week about how he feels about it, or the hockey coach. But I think it's an intriguing idea. It's probably going to happen regardless of what I think. And the University of Minnesota is going to be dragged along with the decision, even if they're reluctant about it. So I say, figure out the best way to do it, endorse it, and make it work.
Okay. All right. Bert Swanson, please.
Yes, I had an interesting thoughts about your statements in your application. While consensus should be achieved whenever possible, achieving consensus is not an excuse for diluting or weakening necessary actions or decisions. I really like that. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Certainly. And I think I alluded to a little bit in the answer to the other question, my statement about the fact that I've chaired a number of boards in my public service part of my career. Part of it is that I think I'm good at seeking consensus. But there always is a danger in consensus if it just always seeks the middle of the road, and it tends to exclude new ideas. So I think that you have to, as much as one may want to have consensus and have agreement, you shouldn't negotiate to 50 cents in every transaction when you start at zero and a dollar. There are principles, there are ideas that are so important that you have to take the initiative to talk everybody into it or drag them along or risk the 7-5 or 4-3 vote. Particularly, I mean, I think from what I've seen in talking to members of the Board of Regents, they're pretty committed to the idea that they aren't all there just to see how vanilla they can make the university and its decision making. It's got to be a very vibrant institution or it'll die. So, thank you.
Patrick Duncanson.
We've talked a little bit about athletics, but just to be specific, what is the role of the regions in athletic matters?
Well, they don't hire and fire coaches.
Athletic directors?
Or athletic directors. Yeah, not as far as I know. It's part of, I think, working with the leadership of the institution. You know, there's a presidential team headed by the president that interfaces directly with the regents, and that's the way it should be. That's the management versus governance issue. If the regents feel that the athletic program, in one way or another, whether it's its leadership or its philosophy, is headed in the wrong direction, then it becomes their responsibility to impact what the philosophy is or what the goals are, working with the president, but I don't think that they get involved in what sports are played, hiring and firing of athletic directors, and it's something that I'm not going to express an opinion on.
I call that you get to ask your question.
Counselor, you are a graduate of one of our most distinguished law schools, where you further distinguish yourself by receiving the Order of the Court. And obviously are a significant member of our bar in Minnesota. But as we look at the next 2 years, you would be on a very steep learning curve as a new region should you be elected. We all know that triage is the name of the game because of the fiscal problems that the university faces. So what is it in particular in your background, or what several things in your background makes you someone that we should favorably consider for recommendation for election of the Board of Regents that prepares you in regard to that triage that you would have to be part of in those next 2 years?
Well, I confess that it's not the Order of the Koi certificate that I still have on the wall of my office. I'm not sure that I really have a very good answer for that. I think I have a broad breadth of experience. I'm familiar with institutions, with fiscal problems. I understand at some level, albeit less than it would be in a year or two, the complications of the University of Minnesota and the funding issues, the tug between tuition and legislation, legislative support. I don't know that there is an easy answer. I'm certainly willing to listen to ideas. I certainly am prepared to advocate the importance, assist in advocating the importance of the university to the legislature. I think the university has a big target on its chest. That's a natural thing to do because of the dynamics of where you find money. I'm not afraid if it means that we have to, that the university has to raise tuition, which would be a very popular move among our students. sure. uh, I I wouldn't be afraid of doing that if that's what had to be done. I think that it would have to be combined with ways to lessen the pain of that in terms of particular segments of the student body. So I don't know. I think maybe I flunked that question because I don't know that there's. I'm looking for an easy answer. I don't have it. 1% sales tax increase. No. All directed to the university. We can all go home.
Okay. Joanne Stately, please.
Mr. Burns, you did address in your application your ability to serve on the regents, and the estimated time is 40 hours, at least 40 hours, and our understanding is it's probably much, much more than that. You also talked about your leadership and your involvement on other boards and serving as the chair, and I'd like you to address that a little further on how you think you're going to continue to manage that going forward, and are you still going to maintain your commitments with those other nonprofits or other organizations that you are involved with?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not a. I used to think my addiction to work was a quality that made me better than other people. I decided maybe 15 or 20 years ago, and it was maybe something I should do something about. So I've recognized the fact that I'm a workaholic, but I'm still drinking from the bottle. So I have a big capacity. I also know that I'm not getting any younger. I don't have any intention of retiring any time soon. But I'm. How am I going to manage this? First of all, the bulk of what I think is 50 hours plus a month of time is going to come out of my practice. That's the easiest place for me. That's the place where I spend the most time. Once again, I'm not trying to wow you with this because it's a little crazy, but I work 70, 75 hours a week at being a lawyer. And I have my partner's agreement and my major client's agreement that the time's coming out of my work schedule. I don't know that in terms of the only other board I'm chairing at this point in time is the Legal Aid Board. And my commitment to them was to get through this crisis. And that crisis, I don't know, crises tend to end pretty slowly. But we're past the worst of that. And I probably would not continue as the chair of that board. I'm not really someone who thinks someone should chair a board four different times like I think I have there. The other current nonprofit involvement, I would stay involved with the women's shelter now, but that's really not, other than when I was running this capital campaign, a very demanding board. It meets once a month, but for like an hour. And I can manage that. So I will make the time. As I told my wife the other day, I'm going all in on this. I'm gonna. I don't believe in doing anything halfway, and I'll do the job.
One other thing. Earlier, you also mentioned that your firm had done business with the University of Minnesota. I don't know if that's an ongoing kind of relationship, or do you see that as something that would be going forward, and how would you manage that?
Well. It's really not that we're not retained by the university on an ongoing basis. Specifically, I've been engaged in the last, on and off over a period of probably 10 or 12 years of miscellaneous issues that they faced in northern Minnesota, principally on the land side. As I understand the conflict policy of the board, I certainly would not act as the university's attorney anymore. Whether my firm could, I really don't know. I did talk to my partners about that. If it was necessary, we would simply not do it anymore. I think that, as I understand the conflict policy, if the university attorney's office, which is who has engaged us, wanted to engage us with a full disclosure, my firm could continue to do work. But that's not a question I'm going to answer. I mean, I'm answering your question, but I'm not the one who decides that. I wouldn't be doing legal work for the university. I think it would not be appropriate.
Thank you. Okay. Lois? Lois, please.
You responded nicely, and we had your words and reference checks that highlighted the many skills that you bring to the boards on which you serve. There are, and that you would bring accordingly to the University of Minnesota. a strong corollary, particularly with the academic and fiscal challenges that were part of it, is the state scholastic board experience, as you just shared with us. There are several, but one significant difference between that board and the Board of Regents, as one deals with those challenging questions and the type of debate, discussion, airing of views that you talk to about, is the open meeting law that's present with the Board of Regents. Talk a little bit about how that may or may not influence the way you have traditionally functioned in challenging board situations.
Okay. Well, in my experience, I have been involved on several occasions with public boards. And in addition, I counsel public boards on occasion about how the open law, meeting law works, or at least what its requirements are, my interpretation of it. I was on the Spirit Mountain Authority Recreation Authority Board in Duluth for about a dozen years, chaired it for 4 years on two different terms as chair, during a time when it was very controversial. We had TV cameras at every meeting. Once again, the scale is very different than the University of Minnesota, but I think that boards can function in an open public atmosphere. It isn't always easy. I think that it was just illustrated at some level by the hiring of the new president. The things that go on that make it harder rather than easier. I also was consul to the, or am consul to the Lake Superior Center Authority in Duluth, which was the major focus of controversy in Duluth. It is the public body that owns the Lake Superior Aquarium or Lake Superior Center. And we've struggled with the way the open meeting law works, but we've worked with it. I'm big into planning, zoning, and development, so I work with city councils, county commissioners all the time. So I'm not freaked by TV cameras, although as a lawyer you can always say you don't try cases in the newspaper. So.
All right, Harriet and then Sylvia. You get the first questions first, okay, then we'll get you, Bert. All right.
My questions have been answered, thank you.
That's it. Sylvia?
Okay, hi. so from your application and the conversation you've had with us today, it seems very clear that you have a really good understanding of some of the challenges that the university faces. So I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit more about how you might approach the challenge of meeting the mission of the university, the three legs of the stool of research and discovery, teaching and learning, and outreach and public service, if you're looking at the financial sort of troubles that we're going to be facing in the future, specifically in relation to the state support?
Another tough question. I think that the goal of the university's mission is pretty well defined. Those goals are pretty clear, and I think the university does in general is working in all those areas. How to accomplish that in a time in this fiscal climate, how to not just keep doing it but do it better, is a very tough question. One part of it, and I say this with due deference to the current leadership of the university, is the new president going to bring inspiration and real leadership and be able to take on these challenges? I think that the university at some level, and I don't mean this critically, and I'm taking this from the view from some guy in Duluth who reads the newspaper and listens to public radio, and has followed the university for many years. I think that the relationship between the university and the legislature, maybe we should try to change it to a relationship between the that's got a broader basis than arguing about the specifics of a budget, which far too much of it goes on, I think, on the legislative side when you think of the autonomy that the university has to
the bigger question of what are the truly important things that government can do in the state. And I live in a community that's got a pothole problem. And we're going to have a pothole problem every time we have freezing and thawing forever. But if we don't fund the university, we're going to have a lot bigger problems. So it's making sure that we all, and we means includes our legislators and the citizens, understand that this institution is right at the top of the list of when the bread line forms.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burns.
Thank you.
All right, Bert.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's short.
Question here. I think this is an important one. Since you're an attorney, I'd like to have you address the issue of intellectual property rights. It affects faculty, staff, students. It's a revenue source. It's a very controversial thing. It affects the relationship with industry. The university is involved in a few intellectual property rights issues right now. What's your take, and what can you do to make sure this is a good relationship with the university and industry?
Not a long answer.
I'm familiar with the issue, I think, and I'm familiar with some of the controversy that's going on. I don't know the details, and as a lawyer, I've learned that what I read about a dispute in the paper seems like something that sounds logical until you actually know what's going on, and maybe it's not quite on. So I'm not going to quote that. What I do think is true is that, and again, this has to do with what the regents' responsibility is. The regents need to make sure that management of the institution has appropriate policies, that the goals combine the reward side in terms of the inventor with the university's ownership and the resources of the university that have been committed to it, to making realistic business arrangements with private enterprise that wants to exploit this technology, exploit being used in the good sense of the word. And it's complicated, and I think that the regents, once again, are at the policy level. Do this right. Make sure that all these interests are served properly, and then endorse the policy and help carry it forward. It's an important issue, and you know, to the extent that the university does it right, it's going to have positive repercussions and negative if it isn't.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's give you a chance for a brief closing statement.
Well, I think in my opening I talked about sort of my little journey here over the last few months. I'm really enthusiastic about this. I'm enthusiastic about the university as a citizen, and I think, as I said, my work as a lawyer and my work in community service has prepared me for this. I'm prepared to take the time to do it right. I think I'm good at this, this kind of work, and I hope that you decide to send me along to the legislature. I will say a couple other things real quickly. One, I realized as I was driving down here this morning how nervous I was about this. again, because I've realized for about 10 days I was nervous about it, I realized I haven't had a job interview for 40 years. So I'm pretty stale. Secondly, I want to thank you because I've sat on your side of the table a few times, and I know how much time and energy it takes and how hard it is. I'm not going to say anything about the other candidates from the 8th District, but they're not bad people. You know, they're very qualified, and so you have to make your decision, and obviously I realize it's not appealable, so... I'll be with it.
Oh, yes, it is.
Oh, that's right. No, I'm not going there. And I don't think I'm not going there seriously, too. So I thank you all for your time. And
thank you very much for your interest in the university, your support, and joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.